Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. It's rather a grim and grey morning, but we are still here and we are still going to have a lot of fun. We've got a great show coming up for you today. I am joined by Rob Salou, who is a FameLab finalist and laser plasma physicist. I mean, that is some title.
Yeah, you just take two words that sound pretty cool and put them together and sure has to be good science, you know?
Definitely. So more coming up about laser plasma physics and particle accelerators from Rob later in the show. We are also going to be doing our weekly experiment, and this week we are going to be moving a can without even touching it. So all you need if you want to take part at home is an empty metal can, like a Coke can, Sprite can, whatever, and a balloon. So yeah, stay tuned, get ready, that's coming up at 5:30. And your weekly sciencey riddle, I think Rob, you might find this one quite easy, but okay, so here it goes. I'm inside the sun, lightning and TV. My namesake also lives in your body. What am I?
Ooh.
I know. I just repeat that once more. I am inside the sun, lightning and TV. My namesake also lives in your body. What am I? If you think you know, you can tweet us at Soho Radio. If you're getting a little bit stuck, stay tuned because we'll be releasing a clue halfway through and the answer right at the end. But now, time for some music. So, Rob, you've chosen all our songs this week. And what are we going to have first, please?
Yeah, first of all, probably a bad choice on your part letting me pick. But we're going to start off with Chasing Rubies by Hudson Taylor.
Chasing rubies, chasing gold. I'd like to tell you before you're told. This is not deja vu. I've never met somebody like you.
No, indeed, it is not deja vu. Thank you, Chasing Rubies. Thank you, Hudson Taylor, for Chasing Rubies. And now, moving swiftly on to one of my favourite sections of the show, it is science news. And there is one story that really stole all the headlines this week. Sertim Hunt and his interesting comments. So Sertim Hunt, who many people will know is a Nobel Prize winning biologist, and he said in a talk to a bunch of journalists, I don't really know why he said this.
Poor choice to make it at a science journalism conference.
Yeah, a bunch of science journalists. So know your audience, Sertim Hunt. he thought he was making a joke. And he says, let me tell you about my trouble with girls. Okay, that's fine. A lot of people have girl trouble. But he sort of approached it in a way that he was like, I think labs should be segregated and not be mixed gender. Because three things happen when you have girls in the lab. They fall in love with you. Okay, yeah, sure, Tim Hunt, everyone falls in love with you. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that man?
Ooh, ooh. Super attractive.
Yeah.
You fall in love with them. Okay, fine. And if you criticize them, they cry. Oh, yeah, all girls will cry. Thanks, Tim Hunt.
it's just so ridiculous. Like, again, I don't even know why he thought he was being funny. Like, it was just so out of place.
I know.
It's like when your granddad makes, like, a really bad joke at a party and everyone kind of goes,
Yeah, and he's tried to defend it. He's like, I actually do mean it. I have had trouble with girls. And I'm like, but that doesn't mean that they can't be in the same working environment as you. If you have trouble with girls, go and sort yourself out. Don't get rid of them.
Yeah, oh, it was just so bad.
This has sparked immense amounts of outrage and an absolutely hilarious, distractingly sexy Twitter campaign, but hashtag.
But this is the great thing, is that people got really angry, but people didn't just start sending him hate mail, or well, some people did, but not most people. Everyone just kind of got on board with this really ironic campaign of like, oh, I'm, you know, distractingly sexy in my lab or whatever else. It was so good.
So you've seen some really great tweets. Will you tell me your favorites?
I've got two. One is by Holly Kirk, who is a seabird scientist, studies seabirds, and she has a picture here with her lying down in a seabird hole saying, "Seabird burrows filled with my tears on fieldwork. My colleague tries not to look at this hashtag distractingly sexy scene." Just too good.
Just brilliant.
And the second one was, "Some call me a dirty girl, some call me a soil scientist. Hashtag distractingly sexy."
And we'll be tweeting this later, but the picture is literally... half her body is down some hole in the ground. It's just her bum sticking out.
This is exactly what Tim Hunt must have been talking about. I mean,
yeah, how could you focus? I personally enjoyed, someone tweeted a picture of sort of their face like plastered on the microfuge, being like, "Just fell in love with the microfuge." And there was another sign, someone put a sign on the door saying, "Caution, mixed gender lab, beware of the tears," or something.
Yeah, the tears were a massive one. And so there was, you know, the meme they have of a woman crying, and they always put words over it.
Yeah.
There's one here that says, "I can't tell if it's significant. The output is so hard to read through my lady scientist tears."
But this is great. So we've been criticised by Tim Hunt, and look at us coming back with our humour and our clever wit.
Basically just putting Tim Hunt back in his box.
Yeah. And in a way, it's sparked a really great conversation and sort of a really great atmosphere about women in science, and so many people are fully behind like gender equality. Like, he's had to resign from UCL because they were the first university to admit females on an equal basis in science. So like, yeah, it's pretty serious what he's been saying.
Yeah, I mean it's huge. But the thing is that it's one of these times when the internet just kind of jumps together and bands together for one purpose, and that was to promote women in science. And if nothing else, I mean, it's just massively given publicity to that side of science, which isn't always looked at, you know.
Yeah, and in that spirit, I thought each of us could talk about one of our favourite women in science. Do you want to go first, Rob?
I will indeed. So the scientist I want to talk about is Lisa Meitner. She's Austrian, and she is a nuclear physicist. And she was around the time of the beginning of the 20th century, and she is credited with being one of the team of three which discovered nuclear fission, discovered this idea that you can take a large nucleus, a large part of an atom, and split it up, giving out energy. And the interesting thing is...
And that's what atomic energy is based on, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And she was the only physicist working on the... or one of the only physicists working on the problem. And so she was the one who actually said, "Oh, here's something interesting you found. This is what I think it is." And even worse is that she didn't get credited for the Nobel Prize that was given out for this. So a Nobel Prize went to one of her colleagues, and she was just like overlooked.
Oh my
and like
God.
Obviously overlooked, right? It was outrageous.
The same story as Rosalind Franklin.
Yeah, but she's awesome. She was the first full professor of physics in Germany, and she not only discovered an element, protactinium, but she also has one named after her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so what's the one that's named after her? Like a
Meitnerium, I think.
Meitnerium.
I'm definitely pronouncing that wrong, but it's element 109, if anyone's interested.
Awesome. I think you know you've made it if you've got an element named after you.
I think you do, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the bar. And she's setting it pretty high.
So I went for Ada Lovelace. And Ada Lovelace actually has become a bit of a champion figure of women in science, because there's a whole day named after Ada Lovelace Day.
Really?
In October. And this is a day purely for celebrating women in science. And she stands out because she, A, was also at a time when women really didn't get much of an education. And I think actually her mum is a really great part in that. She was Lord Byron's daughter as well. Wow. And they had quite a tempestuous relationship, her two parents. And her mum, I think, was worried that Ada would end up with this like artistic, fiery temperament like her father, and put a lot of effort into giving her a really good education in sciences and mathematics, which Ada really, really took to. And she actually ended up working with Charles Babbage on sort of his first computer, really. And she came up with the first computer algorithm. So at the time, you had like automatons where you could program a machine and it would do whatever you wanted. But like today, we have calculators, and you can put in a calculation, it will come out with an answer. And you didn't know the answer before you put it in. When she was around, you could only make something do it if you already knew the answer. So if you knew that 2 + 2 was 4, you could be like, if you put in 2 and 2, it'll turn into 4, but you told it how to do that.
Yeah.
And she was the first person to envisage a way of programming computers or programming machines in this way, that you could put in 2 things and not know the answer and it work it out for you.
That's awesome.
And if you think about how much of our society is based on algorithms these days, and she essentially was the first one to come up with something like that, I just think that's incredible. And in a field where many women don't actually go into. Computer science, yeah, heavily male dominated. So she's my favorite. I one of my first ever radio interviews back in the day was interviewing the lady who came up with the day of Ada Lovelace Day, but I hadn't I don't know why. I hadn't sort of asked anyone how you pronounce the name. I just assumed it was Ada.
Ooh.
Ada Lovelace. I did the whole interview being like, and so why was Ada like your favourite person, blah, blah. She didn't correct me the entire time. Ah. Sounds so stupid. But there we go. So moving on from Tim Hunt, there's also been some non-science news about an earthquake in Malaysia, supposedly caused because some British tourists had a naked photo on top of the mountain.
I believe it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the only logical explanation. Get naked, mountain starts wobbling.
You got some great headlines. It was something like, girls, boobs, cause killer earthquake, cause killer quake, I think was one of my favourites. But it did. It caused a magnitude 6 earthquake in the Sabah state on the island of Borneo. And it killed 18 people who were climbing the mountain a few days later. And the sort of local tribe believe that they are the Kadazan and Dusan tribe. And they believe that the mountain houses the spirits of their ancestors. And the foreigners angered these mountain spirits by stripping off at the sacred site. And they all got arrested before they could leave the country.
Nudity causes death.
Exactly. But that is not how earthquakes really work.
Not well. Sometimes. No, it's not really how they work at all.
So earthquakes are actually caused by the movement of tectonic plates.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're trying to move past each other, they build up this great, great, great amount of friction. And then suddenly there'll be like a jolt and the rocks will slide past each other. And it's that jolt and that release of energy that causes the earth to shake. Some professor once said, imagine if you were bending a ruler and bending and bending and bending of like a plastic ruler, and it's taking all this force and then it snaps and all that force is released.
That's all at once.
Yeah. To think of it.
So tectonic plates, not boobs, cause earthquakes. The take home message today.
Yeah, if you're going to take anything away from the show.
Yeah, but that's interesting because this idea that plates moving and suddenly jolting apart causes an earthquake, it actually happens. It can happen by man-made activities. So,
really?
Yeah. So I was reading during the week that there was some mining companies and oil companies in the US that dig down big holes, and then they throw their wastewater down there. They inject wastewater down into the big holes.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is that the wastewater travels in and finds these plates where these places where the plates are touching. And if you can imagine, these plates have to slide apart to release energy.
Yeah.
And because it's rock, it's pretty, there's a lot of friction there.
Yeah, it's not the smoothest of materials.
It's not really.
Not going to go ice skating on that.
No, but if you can imagine if you were on a slide, a water slide, right, with no water,
mm-hmm.
you kind of inch along really slowly.
Yeah.
But if someone puts a bit of water down there, you get a bit of lubrication and you fly down really fast.
Super fun.
And it is super fun. But it's also the same thing that happens here. So the water falls down into these cracks and causes the tectonic plates to actually shift.
Oh my god, so it's like lubricating the fault line.
Yeah, which is so cool.
That's amazing.
But yeah, so this happens, and there's been a series of earthquakes in Oklahoma this year caused by the disposal of water into these cracks. And there was something like 15 magnitude 4 earthquakes in Oklahoma caused by man-made activities.
Oh my god.
That's more than the last 100 years in Oklahoma, and it's just from them shooting water down.
That's crazy.
But there was some researchers in France that looked at this and said, well, okay, surely we can do something to prevent this. And so they researched how the plates move when the water goes down them. And they found out that the plates will actually creep along a small bit before they give way. So basically, as you're bending that ruler, before it snaps, you there's basically a hint of what's going on.
Like a splintering or something.
Exactly,
you see the cracks.
And so they have this special device that you can put down into the hole, and it will tell you when the plates start to creep. And that will tell you to stop putting water in because there's going to be an earthquake. And you can prevent earthquakes, man-made earthquakes, this way.
Cool. So would it just be that they then put their water somewhere else? Or over time, will the water kind of escape and then they can put more in later?
Basically, what would happen would be that they would just reduce the speed at which they're putting water in. So if you put water in faster, the lubrication effect is greater, and so the plates are more likely to slip. If you trickle water in, for instance, like rain, it doesn't do anything. So you just reduce the flow of water and you will stop your earthquake from happening.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty
that
cool.
It's pretty cool. I wonder if they could do it, if you could predict when like a real big earthquake was going to happen. If you could just like put a bit of water. No, that wouldn't work at all. But
never know. Never know.
Something to look into in the future. One of my other favourite stories is that Surfers Against Sewage and Exeter University have teamed up to do an actual beach bum survey. Like, no jokes. They are recruiting 150 surfers who surf at least 3 times a month. And these surfers also have to recruit a friend that doesn't surf. And they're having like swab parties. So they go and they all take anal swabs to check out the bacteria in their guts.
This does not sound like a study that I would want to volunteer for. And how do you convince your mate to do that? Like, oh, here, Johnny, look, it's for science. Come on.
Free party. Yeah, it's for science. Exactly. And it's for quite an interesting reason. So antibiotic resistance is a huge problem at the moment. And a lot of people are saying like in 20 years, all bacteria are going to be resistant to all the medicines we have. And we know that there's a lot of antibiotic resistant bacteria that get into the sea through our sewage and things. And although water control's got a lot better recently and the water is much cleaner, it's still not that clean. And they know that surfers ingest, I think, 3 times more water than any other kind of beach users. Like, you're just swallowing water a lot if you're falling around in the waves. And they want to have a look at how these bacteria from the sewage and things interplay with bacteria that naturally live in your body and see if that is a mechanism by which some of the resistance is being passed on into us and maybe is a way of it's getting into the population.
So basically by subjecting these surfers to bacteria from wastewater,
yeah,
that their immune system is getting better.
No, not their immune system.
But the people around them or the...
Well, because you know you have lots of sort of friendly bacteria that live in your gut. And that if you're taking in loads of seawater with antibiotic resistant bacteria in it, that they might interact with like friendly bacteria that naturally live in you and pass on some of their resistant genes.
Oh, okay.
So in that way, you're kind of then harbouring or farming antibiotic resistance within you. Like, that's all speculation. They don't know if that's what's happening, but the survey is...
But they're going to take some anal swabs and find out.
Yeah, to see whether surfers have got more antibiotic resistant bacteria in them than non-surfers. So yeah, that's
pretty cool.
Enjoyed all the puns possible there. They were like, yeah, Exeter University have got a bit anal recently.
They're just at that point, they're just too easy. it's almost soul crushing.
And finally, I think you found a really interesting story about Egyptian seeds.
Yeah. This was pretty cool. Basically, the idea is that there are these seeds in ancient Egypt that people used to harvest. They used to harvest seeds called, and I'm definitely going to pronounce this one wrong, Moringa oleifera seeds from a particular tree. And they would crush the seeds off and put them into water. And that would cause the cloudiness from the water to disappear.
Ooh.
And it was their way of like filtering their water. And for a long time, scientists didn't really know what happened. It was kind of similar to how our modern water plants work, where they basically took all the bacteria, clumped them together, and they fell to the bottom of the container. But in the process, the bacteria was actually killed, and they didn't know how the bacteria was killed. And it turns out that there was recent research done that basically there's a protein in the seed which burrows into the bacteria and causes a couple of bacteria to fuse together.
Oh,
and
cool.
That basically is like burrowing into their defenses and...
Kind of like antibodies as well, like how antibodies make bacteria clump together.
Yeah, and so basically that's what kills the bacteria. But it's really cool because they want to plant these... They're trying to do research to find out how they can plant these trees in developing countries easier to allow for people in the developing world to be able to clean their own water. And the thing is that the plant also has a large part of the plant, which isn't the seeds, is edible. And so basically you can eat the plant and then use the seeds to clean your water. So it seems like a pretty good solution all around.
That's amazing.
And totally eco-friendly as well.
Yeah, so eco-friendly. You're just putting more trees back into the environment,
yeah,
eating them, and you can drink water.
Surfer bums and seeds that clean water. I think we're onto a very eco-friendly show today.
Yeah, onto a winner. On that vibe, what is going to be our next song?
I'm going to go for Break Even, the Los Garcia remix by The Script.
Oh, I love this song. Well, I'm wide awake, she's no trouble sleeping. Cause when her heart breaks, no, it don't break even, even, no. What am I supposed to do when the best part of me was always you? And what am I supposed to say when I'm all choked up that you're okay? I'm falling to pieces, yeah. break even by the script. Are you a fan because of the Irish connection?
No. How dare you make such an assumption? Yeah, no, I totally am. No, just a great band, you know?
They are a really great band. So if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Saturday Science Club on Soho Radio, and we've been having a fascinating morning talking about beach bums and Egyptian seeds. But coming up, we've still got particle accelerators and laser plasma physics. God, I'm turning it into a tongue twister. With the fantastic Rob Chalou. And if you've joined us just now, you are in time for our weekly experiment. So all you need is a balloon, a metal can or some sort of aluminium can, empty, not full, and access to hair. So if you're bald, make sure you've got someone nearby who has hair on their head. Hair is the best one of these. And what we're going to do is we're going to move this can without touching it at all, with the power of science. So the first thing you need to do is blow up your balloon. It doesn't have to be super big or anything, but
it's totally balloon.
Rob,
totally the balloon. Totally the balloon, right?
And then what you want to do is you want to rub the balloon on your hair. You want to get fairly good rub going on. What you're trying to do here is create static electricity. So when you're rubbing the balloon on your hair, you're actually transferring charged particles called electrons from one to the other, and at the end of when you've done it for a while, what you should have is a slightly charged balloon.
You're also making a really great hairdo for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really glad that radio is not that visual and no one can see the bird's nest that is on my hair at the moment. But yeah, so it's called static electricity because balloons are obviously made of non-conductive material, so the electrons that you've put on it can't flow anywhere and they are there to stay. Okay, so you've got your statically charged balloon. You want to lie your can on the side and you want to hold your balloon close to it and you will start attracting it towards the balloon. And this way you can make it roll.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
And so for those who can't see, the balloon is attracting the can.
Towards it.
Towards it, yeah, which is pretty cool.
We haven't got a very long course here, but if you got a long flat surface or the floor or something, you could even line them up and have a race.
No, I think we're approaching the end of the table.
Oh.
Nope. That's, oops.
Lucky aluminium cans don't break. So really simple, really easy, really fun one. And the reason that the can gets attracted to it is the charge on the balloon will induce a similar charge in the can because so say the balloon was negatively charged, it will repel all the negative particles in the can to the other side, leaving a positive charge on the side next to the balloon, and that will attract it towards. So it's kind of like magnetism, but with static electricity.
Yeah. Attraction between them. It's also a really good way to make money if you just couldn't really care about the scientific aspect of it. You could always just bet your friend, hey, I bet you I can move a can with
without touching it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how we fund the show, actually. Just go out in the street and make bets like this and win them using science.
Science busking. I actually, I was trying really hard to come up with an experiment that would be related to what Rob does. So we've got lasers, we've got plasma, and we've got particle accelerators. And I do know a way to demonstrate plasma. You probably know it too. But it requires a microwave. And
yep.
That just wasn't quite feasible in the tiny studio that is Soho Radio. But when we're talking about plasma later, if you ever want to see it, just Google or YouTube plasma microwave. And you can basically, with a grape or a matchstick, create plasma. But don't try it at home because it's very easy to break your microwave that way. So
yeah. You
need to be a trained plasma physicist to do that.
Or you just need to do it when your mum or dad's out of the house, basically. but yeah, no, the experiment's actually pretty related to my research. So it's good. We're on the right track.
We'll come back to that one later. Okay, time for song number three. What have we got next?
Okay, we're going to go for Gimme a Try by the Wombats.
Give it a try. Oh, I love the Wombats. I haven't heard anything by them for ages.
It's their new stuff, new album.
New album. Here we go. And I swear we could be gigantic. have tuned into Soho Radio, and it's time to give you the clue to the riddle that we started with. So, we said, I am inside the sun, lightning, and TV. My namesake also lives in your body. What am I?
Ooh.
And the clue, if you haven't got there yet, is I am also a fourth state of matter. That's a pretty big clue. So,
just giving the game away now.
Yeah. But, well, no, not everyone, I think, knows that there are more than three states of matter. But if you stay tuned...
you will be educated.
Yeah.
You will find out.
It'll come out. So, you've probably got it, Rob, definitely.
I think I might do, yeah.
Cool. Well, on to you. And you work on particle accelerators.
Yeah.
That is super cool. Now, when I think of a particle accelerator, as I'm sure many people do, all I think of is CERN.
Yeah. So, biggest one.
Yeah, definitely the biggest one. But you told me that actually particle accelerators are all around us and not necessarily a big circle and often quite small. Hmm. So what actually makes something a particle accelerator?
So a particle accelerator is basically any machine which takes charged particles and accelerates them.
Okay, does what it says on the tin.
Does exactly what it says on the tin. So like your electrons on the balloon, we put electrons into a particle accelerator and it basically accelerates them from zero to however fast you want them to go. And the interesting thing is that everyone thinks, as you said, of the Large Hadron Collider or of CERN. But it turns out that there are 30,000 particle accelerators in the world.
30,000?
30,000, more than 30,000. And less than 1% of them are used for particle physics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because when you think of a particle accelerator, yeah, I was just like, they just smash things together to look at particles.
Yeah.
So what are all these other ones doing?
So there is a whole multitude of reasons why you'd want a particle accelerator. So they're used, so to go back to it, it's 1% used for particle physics. About 9% are used for science in general. So they use them really for looking inside materials, for doing research on DNA, for doing research on the strength of alloys, for looking at molecules, everything like this.
So they just like fire the electrons at the material and look at how they sort of reflect back or get absorbed?
Yeah, they tend to fire neutrons. So neutrons are not charged particles, but they can accelerate them with special methods. And they also, if you cause electrons to wiggle a bit, they give off really intense X-rays, which you can use to image inside materials.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what they do. Yeah, that's how they do it for science. And then there's 45% are used for industry and 45% for medicine. So most particle accelerators are actually either used in hospitals or in industry, which I think is pretty cool.
If I was in a hospital, would I ever come across the particle accelerator myself as a patient?
You might. So there was a story recently about Asha King that everyone would have remembered, where Asha King was a child who had cancer. And he basically wanted to get treatment with a particle accelerator. He wanted to get what's called proton beam therapy treatment. And this was the whole reason why he left the UK to try and go... If you remember, his parents took him out of the UK and then got detained for abducting their own child or whatever it was.
Oh my God, I do remember that. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So basically, he wanted to get treated with a particle accelerator. So they're used to treat cancer. They're used to image tumors. They're used to image other parts of the body. They're used all over. They're used to clean and sterilize instruments.
That's cool.
So massively used in medicine. Yeah. Like all over the place. And they're really, really good at treating cancer. Way better than just X-rays are on their own or...
So is it like a more advanced kind of radiotherapy type?
Yeah, it's more advanced. And basically what it does is conventional radiotherapy is just X-rays, just fire X-rays in and they kind of bulldoze through and damage everything. Whereas proton beam therapy, protons are really good at just depositing all the radiation on the tumor site and not giving collateral damage. So no more radiation around the surrounding area.
So you'd get way less radiation sickness.
Which is why you want to use it for kids.
Yeah. Oh, clever.
So that's what they use in medicine. And then in industry, they're used for everything from making materials harder to making materials softer to making the silicon chips that go into your iPhone to making shrink wrap.
What is shrink wrap?
Shrink wrap is like kind of like, it's like plastic wrap.
Oh, okay, cool. I thought it was going to be like some funky beats. Get smaller.
From a tiny wrapper.
Yeah. Used for making shrink wrap.
So yeah, that's where particle accelerators are used all over the world.
I had no idea. Yeah. That is incredible. And so what are you trying to do with particle accelerators?
So we want to make particle accelerators smaller. And the reason we want to make them smaller is because they've got...
Shrink
wrap. Break it down. I'm not going to start rapping on the radio. That would not go well for anyone. We want to make them smaller because if you can make particle accelerators smaller, then you can make them cheaper and you can make them more available to the industries that need them. So you could put a proton beam therapy machine in every hospital in the country. You could make treatment of materials with particle accelerators cheaper and make startup businesses give them an edge.
Yeah, so all just sorts way more accessible.
Way more accessible, and basically give every lab in the country one, and it'd be really useful for science research too. So we want to make them smaller, and we're doing that using a combination of lasers and plasmas.
Ooh, this is the laser plasma physicist coming out.
Just want to break out.
So how, wait, is this different to how they are currently used?
Yeah, so currently they basically get a large metal tube, mm-hmm. not unlike your aluminium can.
Yep.
And they basically fire radio waves down the tube. And if you fire radio waves down the tube, particles get accelerated. It's actually a really simple method. You don't need a lot. You just need a big metal tube and something that makes radio waves.
And then you can focus the beam and stuff with magnets.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Or you've done your research.
Use magnets to make them go around in a circle, like at CERN.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Cool. So when you use a laser and plasma, how is that different?
So, okay, a plasma is basically just like a charged gas. So it's kind of like a gas where the electrons, the negatively charged particles, have been ripped off the atoms. So it's like a soup of negatively and positively charged particles flowing around each other. And this yes. makes it a really interesting material. And what we do is we take the laser and we basically just fire it at the plasma.
Cool.
And if you fire a laser at a plasma, it acts very much like a boat on a lake. So have you ever seen a boat on a lake, which I'm sure most of your listeners
bobbing
would have
up
seen.
And down?
Not bobbing up and down. If you see a speedboat accelerating across the lake, you get a wake behind the boat.
Yes.
So you get a wave behind this boat. And you can sometimes see some crazy surfers surfing on that wave created by the boat.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we basically do the same thing. So if you put a laser into a plasma, the laser creates a wake, a wave behind it.
Uh-huh.
And you can get electrons to surf on that wave, and that accelerates them.
Oh, wow. So they're taking the energy from the plasma, from the laser, and then surfing through the plasma.
Yeah. Like your beach bums we were talking about earlier on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So that's basically what we do. And the reason that it's useful, the reason that's good, is that you can make particle accelerators 1,000 times smaller doing this.
Is it just because you get so much more energy by using the laser and the plasma? Because plasma is already at a very energetic state, isn't it?
Yeah. It actually turns out that the reason it accelerates particles faster is because you can get really strong electric fields in the plasma. Ah. So really strong waves, basically, which you can't get in the metal tube. Because if you try and put a really, really strong electric field into a metal tube, it basically sparks. Basically has electricity jumping across it, and that causes...
Make lightning instead.
Basically lightning inside in your metal tube, which is not really a good thing. No. It tends to either weld shut your metal pipe or make it explode. So it's not
ideal, especially in a hospital.
Not ideal conditions, really. So the fact of using a plasma just means we can make these electric fields bigger, and that means we can accelerate particles faster.
So, okay, another thing I'm really curious about. We talked a little bit earlier about how you can make plasma in a microwave, but like if you do it for too long, you'll break your microwave. And like that's the only way I know of how to make a plasma. And I know that there's plasma in the sun, but how do you make plasmas for your machines?
So what we do, there's a couple of ways. If you take a gas and you fire a laser at it, it'll become a plasma if the laser is intense enough. Or you can basically just put an electric current across the gas. So basically just make a spark yourself, because a spark is basically like a plasma. Interesting thing, you can make plasma at home without a microwave, maybe to assuage people's fears about about blowing up their microwaves. If you get a match and light the match, fire is a plasma.
Oh.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, so fire is a plasma. And so you can, if you light a match and you look at the bottom of the flame, it's all blue.
Yeah, the blue bit.
Blue and the red bit as well. It's all plasma.
That is cool.
Yeah.
I thought fire was always just one of those things that didn't fit into a category.
No, plasma.
I remember at primary school being like, is it a visible gas? Oh, like it's definitely not liquid. So, okay, plasma. Nice one. And so you basically have like a kind of container of plasma, and then you put your laser in it?
Yeah, so we basically, because the lasers that we use are really, really intense, we can't fire them in the air. So we fire them in a vacuum.
Uh-huh.
And then we basically just, you can do a couple of things, but one of the ones that we usually do is you basically just make a little container and fill it with gas, and then just fire the laser into the container, and it causes the gas to become a plasma. And then you fire another laser in, and that makes the particles accelerate.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so
all of the lasers.
All lasers for all stages.
Yeah.
So your aim is to make really small particle accelerators. How small is the smallest one currently?
So there was one made last November.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping up with the news here. That accelerated a particle from zero to about 1 billion kilometers an hour.
Whoa.
In a space of 9 centimeters.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
All I can say is, suck it, Ferrari. So if you were to make a conventional accelerator like CERN,
yeah,
to do the same job, it would take basically an Olympic size stadium.
To do that.
Yeah. To do the same speed. Yeah. And so they did this in 9 centimeters, which is awesome.
That's amazing. Like, including all lasers and everything. No, just the trajectory.
Just the accelerator.
So it's not quite, you can't quite fit it in your pocket, the whole thing.
No, not yet. So the laser tends to be quite big. And that's one thing that we're researching at Oxford, is to try and make the lasers that we use smaller. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the main reasons, is that it's great having this really small particle accelerator, but if you have a massive laser to drive it, then it's kind of pointless.
Yeah, it still takes up a whole room.
Yeah.
Not an Olympic stadium, though. So
not an Olympic stadium.
Definitely
so
progress.
You're already making progress. Yeah, exactly.
And what got you interested in this field in the first place? Did you just love lasers as a kid, like pretending they were lightsabers or something?
My mother actually had to confiscate lasers off me at one point because I had like a laser pointer. And I just kept like pointing it
at people's eyes.
No, I wasn't that bad. I kept like pointing at the TV, or if you're watching TV, you're pointing at the wall. And my mother was just like, right, that's it. It's out.
Were you ever one of those kids that would like hang out their window at home and like point your laser on someone walking on the street? Because that's happened to me.
No, that's super dangerous. Don't do that.
I'm walking along and then I notice like this red spot kind of on the pavement, and then it's like on my shoulder, and you feel like someone's trying to snipe you or something, but it's just a kid with like a laser pointer. Just
Where did you grow up?
London.
Well, I'm leaving after this interview. No, you shouldn't do that. Don't fire lasers at people. Don't fire them at the sky of planes. Don't just, you know, use them for presentations.
Exactly.
Do a science presentation.
Be responsible.
Yeah, be responsible. use with care.
PowerPoint only.
I don't know. I did physics for my undergraduate and like really enjoyed studying plasma physics. And then, put lasers and plasma together. It has to be good science, as we said earlier on. So I kind of figured, why not?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think it's about time for another song. What will we be having next?
We're going to go for a change of mood, and we're going to go for Fisherman's Blues by the Waterboys.
I haven't heard this one, so I'm intrigued.
Casting out my sweet life with a band of none that love. Oh, ceiling bearing down on me. Say the starry sky above with light in my head. You in my arms. Woo!
That was so lovely and cheery.
Yeah.
Why that one?
I don't know. Just a song I've liked for a long time.
Yeah.
And I felt, hey, do you know what? It's too much modern music out there nowadays. You've got to bring it back. Related to all the older people listening.
Childhood,
you know?
Favourites.
Yeah.
So one other reason why Rob is on this show, he's actually a budding science communicator himself. And I first met Rob at the FameLab final this year. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know FameLab, although long-time listeners should, because Matt, our old presenter, also took part, it's a science communication competition where you speak for 3 minutes on any science topic of your choice, and you're judged on your content, your charisma, and your clarity. And if I remember correctly, Rob, you came runner-up this year?
Yeah, close but no cigar.
Yeah, no, but still, that's pretty amazing. And also you get to go to Cheltenham and just like watch and not have to do the whole stress of like actually giving another talk again. But yeah, your talk was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it was you. So interesting. How did you Rob Spiner was talking about when you're in a plane and the oxygen masks come down, where is that oxygen actually coming from?
Yeah, because there's no oxygen actually stored on the plane. No oxygen gas stored in the plane.
Yeah.
So we weren't sure if it was just a Ryanair policy to save money, or we weren't sure if it was like some kind of placebo, but it turns out that they actually make oxygen on the plane.
Yeah.
From a nice mix of fireworks, weed killer, and rocket fuel. Which just sounds so safe.
You wouldn't have thought those three would then give you like life breathing gas.
No, you wouldn't really put it together, would you? No, you wouldn't think, no.
And you actually had one of those plane masks as your prop.
Yeah.
How did you get that?
Oh, well, I couldn't be telling now. I'd be arrested.
Oh, dear.
No. My dad came over to the talk, and we live quite near an airport in Cork in Ireland. And so we have some friends who work at the airport and basically said, hey, could you supply us a mask?
Could you get us a
spare? And they were very nice. So shout out to Aer Lingus for that.
Yeah, nice one, Aer Lingus.
Yeah.
Good times.
You're low cost, but no.
And one of your other talks, which was a super challenging topic, was explaining what happens if you go into a black hole.
Yeah. That was my first heat talk. And basically, I was describing what a black hole is, which is just basically a place in space where gravity is so strong that not even light can break free. Mm. And so it looks black. So it looks like a black circular void of nothingness.
Yep, super enticing.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like my ex-girlfriend's heart.
yeah.
Which is a hark back to the actual talk where I said this and it went down... questionably.
So what has this ex-girlfriend done that you wanted to throw her into a black hole?
Ah, well, listen, we don't have enough time. We'd be here all day. no, yeah, so it was an interesting topic to talk about, but very cool. And we basically just talked about what would happen to you. Basically, if you fall into a black hole, your body will just get stretched out until it's like spaghetti, and then it'll get ripped apart atom by atom. That seems like a pretty decent way to go.
And why does your body get stretched out?
Because the gravity, if you were to approach a black hole, the force of gravity starts to ramp up really fast. Mm-hmm. And so the force of gravity on your feet would be much stronger than the force of gravity at your head. And so it would literally stretch you apart.
Your body's just being pulled at different rates.
Like a torture rack, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it sounds awful, doesn't it?
Sound horrible.
but yeah, so that was my first talk, yeah. Cool.
Very nice. And your third one? No. Well, second in the process.
Yeah, the second one in the process was about exploding lakes. So I didn't know lakes could explode, but apparently they can.
I didn't know either.
Yeah. So apparently, carbon dioxide gas sometimes filters up through the cracks in the Earth's surface and becomes dissolved in lakes. And basically,
you would have thought it would just carry on bubbling out.
You would. But like, there's a lot of physics in there to do with how liquids behave and about pressures and things like that keep it down there. And basically what happens is that any kind of shockwave from a landslide or things like this can cause the carbon dioxide bubbles to suddenly break free and jump out of the liquid. And it's very similar to a process that happens to your beer bottles. If you've ever been at a party and you've got your beer bottle and you're having a nice time and your mate comes along and taps the top of your bottle with their bottle.
Favorite game at the barbecues.
Oh,
yes.
Listen. Great, great, great call. Basically, the beer will foam up over the top and out. And it's the exact same process that happens to the lake. And so it was cool that I could show them, like, the process itself happening
whilst explaining.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool. And hey, got to drink a beer on stage, so how bad?
Yeah, I mean, that is science communication.
Science communication at its finest.
At its finest. I did a talk about synthahol, so kind of drinking as well, but I didn't take a pint on stage with me.
No, but I mean, everyone loves the science of alcohol, you know.
Yeah, it's so interesting because everyone, well, most people drink it a lot, and we all know it does interesting stuff to our bodies. So let's find out more about it.
But we just feel better about ourselves if we talk about science when we're drinking, because it doesn't feel like you're doing such a bad thing then.
Have you ever given alcohol up?
Yes, I have. Not for very long.
Yeah, I gave it up for Lent once, which was hard.
Yeah.
And interesting, but
but you went back on it.
I went back on it straight away afterwards. It was more of a challenge. I just wanted to see if I could do it because it's so ingrained in our culture.
Yeah, it is.
Like even in work and stuff. But yeah, this isn't really science, so I don't know why I'm talking about it. We've only got 5 minutes left. So yeah, if you want to see any of Rob's talks, just YouTube search Rob Shallou. That's Shallo.
Nicely spelled.
Fame
yeah.
Lab. And all three of his talks should come up. They are really, really good. I definitely recommend checking them out. So all we've got left is to reveal the answer to our riddle. No, Rob, yeah, you've probably got this straight away. So do you want to do the honours and reveal what the answer was?
The answer is plasma. Plasma is in the sun and plasma is also in your blood, but not the same kind.
No, not the same kind. That's why I was very careful to say
good
namesake.
Distinction. Yeah.
Like they do very different things.
I wouldn't put, like, you know, the same plasma I work with in my blood. It wouldn't
burn your body up from the inside out.
It wouldn't be good.
So congratulations to everyone who got that right, and all that's left really is to choose our final song of the show.
Ooh,
this is a big one. What do you want to end on?
I'm gonna go for something happy.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go for Codaline,
Love Like This. So thank you very much for coming on the show today, Rob.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you'll be gone. It's as simple as a change of heart. I'm not gonna think about the future.
Oh,